Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, let's get the boring shit out of the way first. If you've got any spare money and you like this podcast, please go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod, where in exchange for even two beans a month, I give out hoovering related prizes. Thank you, I love you, thank you, thank you. This week's guest was a real coup. I'm talking to an actual dietitian, a real life eating expert called Sophie Medlin. I'm pretty relentless with my questions, and she smashes nearly as many myths as I do almonds. There are two varieties in our classroom picnic. Ever wanted to know about the importance of breakfast? Supplements? Whether everyone's a little bit disordered? Especially dietitians? Yes, I go there. And we get into a very sort of cuddly version of a tussle over body size. But as I think you'll be able to tell, I found every second of this one so riveting. I hope you do. I've brought some a picnic, as have you.
Well, I sort of have. I've bought a picnic from Marks and Spencer's, which is slightly cheating.
I don't think that's cheating at all. Immediately want to eat a light salted almond.
Who does
that? From M&S?
No, they're from this amazing shop around the corner from me.
Oh, really?
I love shopping in those little shops that are full of exciting things that you can't buy in Tesco's. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like baklava and all those exciting snacks that you can't get in other places.
I live in southeast London, I'm obsessed with the Turkish food centre.
Exactly, those kinds of places. Yeah, that's my jam.
Yeah, like independent, ethnically interesting supermarket.
Absolutely. And often I get asked, can we help you? And I'm like, no, I'm just looking at everything.
Yeah, no. I'm like, I don't know, all the cliches about women love shopping. I couldn't care less about shopping for clothes, but I would happily stand in a food shop.
Oh, yeah.
Just ogling things.
Yeah. French supermarket is the best place in the world.
Oh, hypermarché.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Foreign supermarket.
Because they've got almost as much stationery as food, and that's probably the only other thing I enjoy shopping
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely.
Get in. Sophie Medlin.
Correct.
Did I say it right?
You did, yeah.
Woohoo! I feel very grateful to have you on. You're probably the most sensible person I've spoken to so far.
It's a facade, and I'm afraid you're going to be horribly disappointed.
Explain for us where we are, who you are, and what you do, and I'll start dishing up some grub.
Perfect. So I am a dietitian by background. So I've been a dietitian. I worked in the NHS for a long time before I moved to academia. So we are at King's College London, which is where I am a lecturer and a researcher. So So I do this, and I also have a private practice where I look after patients with lots of interesting conditions and all sorts of things. And I'm also lucky to do lots of interesting media work like this and lots of other things.
So well, that's good. We met on Women's Hour.
I love Women's Hour.
That's, we were talking about hunger. I'll come on to that. Dietitian.
Yep.
It's fascinating. So I'm just going to talk through this just in case there's anything you don't like. But basically I made a hopefully creamy but vegan potato salad.
Looks delish.
All this is like showcasing.
It's got gherkins in it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you like gherkins?
Yeah, I like everything.
Okay, good. There's gherkins, capers and lots of herbs and creamy stuff. Vegan mayonnaise. And then that is roasted carrots with cumin, orange and roasted almonds.
Perfect. Fits in with my ginger theme.
Yes. And this is just a green salad. Do you like tomatoes?
I do.
Okay. I'm going to just dish you a little bit of everything up, shall I?
I'm very happy about that.
Great. What orange things have you brought?
So I've got lots of red hair and it's kind of my trademark. And my USP, if you will. And I realised recently that I eat a vast amount of ginger food. Ginger-coloured food, orange food, which possibly feeds how red my hair is.
Yeah.
Think.
Do you think, like, flamingos?
Well, maybe, maybe.
Because they're pink, aren't they? Because of the light. Shrimp. Yeah, the shrimps.
There's some shrimps. What's happening?
What they're eating off the bottom of their area.
Oh, is it? I thought it was shrimps, but is it, like, plankton?
I thought it was algae. I might be wrong. It might well be shrimp. There's certainly something dyeing their feathers in their diet.
Yes.
Have I achieved... Is this a good meal?
It's a pretty good meal, yeah. I think we're maybe lacking some protein. But
what about the nuts?
Oh, yeah, we have got almonds. And, there's
and
some almonds
I bought and half a pot of hummus.
Yeah, you're doing okay. You're doing okay for a vegan.
Amazing. Do you know what? I honestly was like, my boyfriend was really laughing because I was like, I really want to showcase that it's possible to have like enough protein if you eat a plant-based diet. I'm pretty sure that just a handful of almonds is not really going to cut it, so I'm going to take this hummus. And he was like, what are you going to carry it in? And I was like, really small Tupperware so that I can pretend to Sophie I have a healthy small portion.
No, don't ever do that. I eat everything.
Good.
And I've really realised recently, you and I were just talking about exercise, and I'm doing an absolute ton of exercise at the moment, but I'm also eating so much food that I'm not really losing any weight.
Oh, no, me neither. I'm positively gaining weight,
exactly.
I think.
It's stress eating.
Yeah. But it's, right, yeah, stress eating. But also, I think it's muscle gain, isn't it, if you're training really hard.
That's very true.
And then you're just hungrier.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you just have to accept the way that your body, what you want at that time, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested in that. I think even from a science-y point of view, that's... also, I'm going to let you help yourself to hummus and just leave the spoon on there because I'm going too heavy.
Too heavy with
the
hummus?
Too heavy with the old hummus. Give you a clean knife and fork.
It's great.
It's a bit of fun, isn't it? A bit of fun. Sprinkle some of your salty almonds on my... It feels quite summery as well, because it's blooming lovely outside.
Mm-hmm.
Is there literally no food you don't like?
I'd really like to like offal. But I can't. And I've
tried. Because it's so rich in iron and
so full of nutrients, But I can't. And I've tried, but I can't. I'll put it this way, there's nothing that I wouldn't eat in front of the Queen. Like, if the Queen served me something, I would be able to eat everything. But there are things that I don't choose to eat. What about you? Could you eat liver in front of the Queen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If it had been cooked... I mean, in front of the Queen, it's likely to be, like, beautifully cooked.
Yeah.
I've never been that into it. But also, I made that rich noise. I've also never been that repulsed by it. It's just a texture thing, I think.
I can't bear that flavour, that, like, only liver flavour. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, but, massive hypocrite, I do love pâté. Patty on toast before I went planty. And it's still probably, I'm sure, I'll go to somewhere in France where there's something that they do amazingly and I'll definitely try it.
Mm.
Yum. But I think maybe it's more about the stuff that's in there, like orange or mushrooms or whatever.
Yeah. No, I can't do it. I would for the Queen. Or any other person that I respect.
Meghan and Harry.
I don't think they'd make me. I just feel like they'd be quite relaxed about it.
I do. I've got a feeling that Meghan and Harry would be like, don't eat something you find repulsive on our bowl.
Yeah.
That's their generation of royal.
I like that.
That's why they're pretty snazzy.
This is delicious.
Is it good?
I love the caraway seeds on the carrots.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's Hugh Fearnley, what's it called? There's this amazing book that I used more than any other book called Three Good Things.
Oh, right.
And it's just loads and loads of simple combinations of three things, but all things where the flavours are.
Mm.
Nice. I use this company called Oddbox.
Mm.
And they're only in South London at the moment. They're just moving into West London.
Oh, nice. And they send you wonky vegetables?
Mm-hmm. Ooh. The supermarkets have rejected. So in this...
Silly supermarket.
With tomatoes, the salad, all that they've ordered too much of, they've grown too much of.
Mm.
These little strange raclette potatoes and the carrots and the orange,
mm-hmm.
all from my last box of that.
Nice.
It's all right, isn't it?
I like that.
Also, often they don't even look that wonky. They'll just be a bit scuffed or something.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're just massive.
Mm.
Like a massive aubergine or cauliflower.
What more could you want?
Mm.
That's why I love shopping in those little independent shops, because I had some sweet potato last night, and the colour of it compared to regular supermarket sweet potatoes, it's amazing.
It's just weird, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, I'm glad this is yummy. I really wanted to impress you.
Well, you've successfully impressed me.
How did you end up being a dietitian?
Do you know, I was so lucky, because when I was 15, I decided I wanted to be a dietitian, and then that's what I did.
Really?
Yeah, there is a good story behind that, actually. It's a bit of a long one.
Great.
But seeing as you're eating, I'll tell you. So I was not doing very well in school, and I was just kind of messing around and not doing my work and having a nice time and what have you.
Renegade, where did you grow up?
In Devon.
Okay, I grew up in Dorset.
It's a country girl, it's the best. And I was predicted D's and E's in my GCSEs, and I thought, my dad won't be very happy about that. So I worked really hard and redid all my coursework and revised for my exams, and pulled it out of the bag.
Wow.
I can remember being there on my GCSE envelope opening day, results opening day,
yeah.
And I was crying, and I had my envelopes in my hand, and I just couldn't open them. I was so scared.
Oh.
And my French teacher, who predicted me an E, came up to me and said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "Because I'm scared." And she said, "You've got a B in French, you idiot. Open your
envelope." Oh, wow.
And I finished it. I was super happy. And so then at that point, I was like, right, I could actually do something scientific. Clearly, I'm good at sciences. And I'd done catering at GCSE and really liked the nutrition stuff that we did in
there. Oh, God, I didn't know that was an option.
Well, catering was then. I don't know that it is now.
Yeah.
But we did things like designing a gluten-free diet and that sort of thing. And my catering teacher had known a dietitian and said, maybe you'd be good at this. And it was just opportunistic, really, really lucky.
Just actually, to be honest, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, when you asked why did you end up in your career, where essentially the answer was, I got motivated to work really hard at Sudden at School and then was given some really good careers
advice. I know. I'm so lucky.
That's amazing.
So lucky. And then, went down that route, and I love it. It's a fantastic career. For anyone who's looking for a career, being a dietitian is a fantastic career. I'm very lucky.
I find it fascinating. So outside of academia, what sort of roles and ways in which, do you work, do dietitians work? Do you work with athletes and do you work with... Have you ever guided someone through a really extreme body change, like an athlete or perhaps someone who was dangerously under or overweight and or somebody work with people with disorders also, or an actor that had to get really massive or tiny for a role? Big question.
So I've got two great stories for you. So one of the areas I really like working in is with boxers who have to fight to weight category. So any weight category fighters.
Wicked.
So that's kind of how I got into boxing myself.
Really?
Generally enjoying beating men up in the evenings.
Get in!
Yes.
Oh, everything I find out about you, I love you more.
Yes, Jess.
Delicious.
Yeah, so I was looking after this boxer who is 6 foot and he fights at a very light weight for his frame. And that gives him lots of advantages in that his reach is very long because he's so tall. And also he has very light on his feet and all these kinds of things. But it's very hard for him to stay in that zone in terms of his body shape.
So he has to eat very little of very specific things.
But also he needs to have loads of energy to train as hard as they do and loads of power and all these kinds of things. So juggling his body composition on the lead up to a fight, then at weigh-in, and then when he's weighed in and he's as dry as he possibly can be in terms of water and salt and everything else, then we refuel all his muscles just before the fight's getting back there. And I love that kind of really scientific... Let's play around with your body stores and how your body stores nutrients and where and all that kind of stuff. That's amazing to me. I love it.
I find that so fascinating. And I don't know if I'd like it day in, day out, but
one day I would like someone to just tell me what to do exactly. Just watch it more, like, just see how amazing the body is like that, that you could go, I'm going to do this. If you had a goal in mind, for example, the desire to win in your chosen athletic sport,
nothing more motivating.
But also, I think, I don't know, if you got your dream part in a film that required you to be...
Yeah.
Anne Hathaway's getting shredded for something at the moment.
Is she?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I don't know what, but she just put something brilliant on Instagram. Mm. But something like that, I'd be like, one thing I would love is someone to say, you need to get Emily Blunt arms.
Yeah, and we're going to send you a personal trainer and a chef.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, you can do it then. If that's your actual, if it's your actual job to look a certain way or to train to be a certain weight or whatever, or like if you think about models, it's their job to look the way they do.
Well, that's...
It's not my job to look like that. I can't look like that because I sit on my bum all day at a desk.
But I also would never want to look like that. And also, I kind of want a world where the majority of models don't need to look like that. I mean, there are other models, but they're seen as sort of an alternative to a standard thing, which is so emaciated. Would you ever, like, on a moral standard, go like, oh no, I'm not going to help you become dangerously thin so that you could get that catwalk job?
It depends on the person that I'm working with. So the other story I was going to tell you is that I worked with an actor who is playing Ike Turner in the Tina Turner stage show.
Oh, wow.
And he wanted to lose weight because Ike Turner was a very kind of emaciated person, so he wanted to look very, very thin.
Yeah.
You know, he's not doing that because he is desperately trying to get into something or he's desperately trying to
gain
something or because he hates himself or he's been told he's not good enough or any of those things. So... He's of very sound mind, doing it for a really positive reason because he's a method actor and he wants to really get into role. If a girl came to me and said, I really want to be a model, but I'm too overweight, I would probably steer her in a different direction.
Yes.
And I would probably, before she came to my clinic, I would have a chat with her on the phone and say, I'm not the right person to help you.
You're a wizard. Are there people so loaded that they have their own dietitian?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
My,
I ask this because, do you know what? Apparently Nicole Scherzinger's got someone whose sole job, full-time job, is to carry her hair.
Sorry, her wigs? Or
no, her hair. Walk around behind her and hold up
That's
her
ridiculous.
Heavy, heavy strands of hair.
I need that.
You don't. That's what hair bands are for, Nicole. That woman could be reading
That's
a book.
Ridiculous. Yeah, last year I saw an advert for a dietitian part-time in London, part-time on their yacht in the Caribbean.
Oh.
One guy wanted to lose weight and manage his cardiovascular disease. And
oh, he had a disease. That kind of justifies it a bit more.
And I was like, I am quite tempted to jack it all in and go and live on a boat for 6 months of the year and just follow this guy around and cook nice food. And I probably would, he probably had a chef, probably wouldn't even have to cook. Just have a little chat with him and tell the chef what he was.
Can you imagine it? If someone's kind of, I don't know, this is making a lot of assumptions, but if someone's done well enough to have a yacht and spend half the year on, I would not want to be the person whose job it would have to be to say, oh, no, 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 no seconds for you, Pierre.
I like how he's French.
Yeah, I've made him French, just to sort of make him a little bit more likeable.
Or less likeable, depending on your standpoint.
I could have called him Pippin. Barnabas.
Yes.
Someone's going to sink your yacht. Oh,
that's true.
And the sound of my phone falling on the floor behind me. It's
being trapped on a yacht with somebody, with Pippin, Barnabas. Yeah, sounds pretty hellish if he's not a fun character.
Yeah, totally.
But then if he has a chef and all the shopping's done and you make sure that this food is delicious, it's still being healthy.
I mean, I'd be taking this job for 2 months or something, for sure. But I don't want a lifetime... at Pippin's helm.
Literally or metaphorically.
That's so cool. It's so cool you get to work with people doing those things. Do you work with people with eating disorders? Or do some dietitians do that?
Some dietitians
do. And sometimes do you work in conjunction with doctors? Because doctors don't get any training in like the nutritional value of food and the science of eating, really.
No, no. Yes, is the answer. So when I was working in the NHS, I worked primarily on intensive care, looking after people who can't eat anything at all. So
really?
Mainly tube feeding people or feeding people into their veins. And that's all about science and biochemistry and what, you know, all that kind of sciencey stuff, what your organ's going to do with stuff and all that sort of thing, which I love. So as a dietitian, you can work with people with eating disorders, for example, or and that's like, but because that's a psychological thing.
Yes, you need to be working with
therapists. The primary
person
is the psychotherapist. Yeah.
So I have issues around binge eating, and I'm working through those with my shrink.
Nice. Everyone needs a shrink.
But also with a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. But I've had to ask the personal trainer to, like,
stop giving you nutrition advice.
Yeah. Well, also that's not. I mean, that's some of theirs fortes. Or some of their areas of knowledge, I say, forte's a bit strong. But they ought to have some, but basically, like, she bless her, she was like, okay, cool, yeah. I mean, just drink lots of water. I was like, thank you. But it's only because she'd, like, asked me for, like, the third time for a few days' food diary, and I was like, I'm afraid I know that for me that stuff makes me a bit obsessive, and then I start thinking about calories, and then I find that quite destructive to what I'm trying to do, which is just be much more connected to eating while I'm eating, and an idea of fullness, and nothing to do with restrictive diets and that kind of thing.
And I say all the time that the most important thing is understanding your relationship with food. Mm-hmm. I think we talked before about this analogy that I use around it's not the cake that's the problem that you're eating. If you're eating the cake with friends and you're eating it because you're having a nice time, great. If you're eating cake on your own at night because you're miserable, there's a problem. It's not about the food. It's not about any of the foods. It's about the reasons why you're eating, the reasons behind your eating, and your relationship with food is much more important than the other bits, really.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's an element of, if you're smashing a whole cake on your own in the middle of the night, you're not even really tasting it. It's just an emotional suppressant.
Yeah.
Just like booze.
Absolutely,
But then sometimes I think this, I don't know, maybe it's sometimes it's okay.
We all have our vices, don't we?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a vice, and everyone has a thing that they go to for.
It's just knowing that that's why you're going to it for it.
Yeah, and then acknowledging
that that's not
that,
ideal.
That it's what I like to call low-functioning behaviour. I do some low-functioning behaviours.
Well, you're inhuman. That's what I was going to ask. Do you think everybody's a little bit disordered in their eating?
I think everybody has a complicated relationship with food.
Right. Is that, to me, it feels like there's a spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
I'm perhaps quite extremely liberal on this, but I think there's a spectrum on all sorts of things, including sexuality and all sorts of things.
Of course, yeah.
And I don't know. I've hardly met anyone who has a perfect relationship with food. Mm. And when they do, they've got a terrible one with something else that does the same job in terms of self-esteem, emotional suppressant, escalation, etc.
Absolutely. So you have to remember that food lights up those happy places in your brain in the same way that drugs do, in the same way that alcohol does to a certain extent, in the same way that sex does. Any of those things, the same way as gambling does, all of those addictive behaviours can be mimicked with food. And that's not because food is addictive, it's because as humans, through evolution, it was very positive for us when we found food to be very excited and happy about it. We needed to be driven by food, and we needed to want food and seek it out and be happy when we ate it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have survived. We'd just been sat on, like, well, the Serengeti or wherever we were, just lounging around and not bothered about hunting and gathering and
just accidentally dying of starvation because we forgot to have the impetus to go foraging.
We would have been rubbish. So the fact that we seek out food and we enjoy it and we get pleasure from it is an evolutionary benefit. The problem is now we live in a society where food is so easily accessible everywhere we go.
Yeah.
And everything's very calorie dense, energy dense.
Yeah.
And not very healthy. Or lots of the foods that we really crave are not very healthy. And so that's a problem.
Do you think eventually we'll evolve out of that desperate? If humans exist before an apocalypse for long enough, it feels like there would be a reason for us to evolve out of needing to be so driven by food.
Yes, and there certainly is, but that's going to take a long time. Yeah. But the other thing to think about is that people who struggle a lot in our current sort of modern environment become very obese, develop diabetes earlier, develop cardiovascular disease, strokes and heart attacks and things earlier. So potentially there's some natural selection stuff that will happen there as well. So people who maybe have a really real struggle in terms of controlling their diet when they from a young age.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's a little bit terrifying.
It's very terrifying.
Yeah.
The obesity epidemic and all of those public health crises are terrifying.
When we were on Women's Health, we were talking about hunger, and what I didn't get to say on that program as a theory, and I don't know if you would agree with it, but I think that our lives are so busy that it's not just this abundance of food that most people have access to, and I feel like perhaps I need to be careful not to just assume there, because there are people in very, you know, on our doorsteps on in food poverty, and the little food they do have access to from food banks, etc., is not going to be ideal. It's not going to be fresh, etc. It's going to be probably the most processed, least healthy, whatever. So, but on the assumption now that compared to when we were on the Serengeti lounging around, we've got access to more stuff. I also think that we've built our lives up to be at such a pace where hunger and those things occur, and also overeating and undereating, or like forgetting to eat for a day, so that by the time you get to eat, you're hugely starving and you overeat, whatever. I think all of that comes down to we've made ourselves too busy to be able to connect with our bodies and concentrate when we're eating. Like, there's a movement towards like mindful eating where you really slowly taste everything and you chew for ages and stuff. And I know personally, and also loads of people who've tried it, go, it's impossible. I don't have time to take an hour and a half to eat my lunch.
But when we look at populations who do, like the French, there is a very different relationship with food there and across the Mediterranean, actually, which is why rates of cardiovascular disease are much lower.
Really?
Despite things like the fact they eat a lot of cheese, drink a lot of wine.
And have they got much lower diabetes and obesity?
Yeah, much lower. Obesity is rising, and so will everything else. But
is that because of their access to our shit food, though?
Well, that's the theory, yeah. The influx of fast food, the uptake of the faster-paced lifestyle. But yeah, in the UK we are, and in America arguably, we do have a terrible relationship with food. And part of that is because, well, as a population, and part of that is because we are so busy. So if you think about families and if you think about children, so you and I were raised in the countryside.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to have my mum at home for, you know, she worked some part of my childhood, but hardly at all.
Right.
So she cooked food. When we got home, you know, we had lunch made for us. When we got home from school, there were snacks made for us, and then she would make dinner. Completely
idyllic. What did you have when you got home from school? I always had Marmite on toast.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, I really wanted crisps or penguin biscuits, which obviously we had sometimes, but she would also make things like apple slices that we would dip in honey and all this stuff.
I love apple dipped in peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. All the good stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, that's if you imagine now, we're in a situation where for most families, partly because of the housing problem, big societal issue, both parents have to work to pay the mortgage.
Yeah, and or the rent.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, if you're lucky enough to have a mortgage. And so there's no one at home for kids when they get home from school, so there's hardly any, you know, reliance on ready meals, reliance on the chicken shop, reliance on whatever it is to feed your family is the norm.
Yeah.
You know, and that means that rates of childhood obesity are massive. There's all those issues there. And it's not because women are going to work. It's not, you know.
No. It's because we're all so busy.
We're all so busy. Everyone's busy. And we have stopped prioritising food and meals as being, you know, an important thing to do.
Yeah. And for the people that are very busy but are able to carve time out and or have the help and or be able to afford the company that delivers you the fresh ingredients and or the fresh... It's money, again. It's a privilege. I don't know how into it to get because it's such a sensitive issue at the moment, the stuff with obesity, but there's a movement, there's a very positive movement towards, I think, within feminism, towards body positivity and an acceptance that there are all sorts of shapes and sizes, by which I mean quite, you know, I think right up to big sizes, 18, 20, right down to, you know, size sixes that are really healthy. That don't correspond, though, to looking good on a BMI scale. I'm really down with that. I don't know whether you would be. I don't know. I think that you can be quite extremely big and small and still be really fit and healthy. What would you think?
I mean, genetically, obviously, women are of all different shapes and sizes, the same as men.
Yeah.
What we know from the research is that the leaner you can be without being underweight statistically, based on BMI, so it's not an ideal measure for everybody as an individual, but population studies tell us that the leaner you can be in terms of BMI, the lower your risk of things like cancer.
Really?
And heart disease and diabetes and everything else. So the leaner you can be without being underweight, the lower your risk of these things.
Okay.
So whilst it's absolutely possible to be a size 18 and be a lot fitter than your size 10 counterpart who is maybe fat on the inside but thin on the outside. Then there, you know, the overwhelming majority of evidence suggests that somebody of that size is much more likely to have heart attacks, much more likely to have strokes, much more likely to get cancer than someone who is slimmer.
Right.
Unfortunately. And whilst I totally got on board with the movement, Because ultimately, if someone who's a size 18 loathes themselves, mm-hmm. the chances of them loving themselves into nourishing their bodies properly and doing exercise because they love themselves and investing mm-hmm. that time and energy, we've just talked about how much time and energy it takes to put into going to the gym,
yeah.
preparing proper food for yourself,
yeah.
rather than sitting on the sofa and going and grabbing a takeaway,
yeah.
much quicker. You have to love yourself and you have to yeah. care about yourself and you have to be invested in yourself
mm-hmm.
to take those steps to make changes, to make things yeah. better for yourself. And that's hard. Like,
if but you can be a size 18 and be doing all that new really good stuff where you cook all your stuff and you exercise loads. It's funny though, isn't it? But there's also a movement now that it's that positivity then, that there's a difference between saying fatness is disgusting,
oh yeah,
which is horrific, but was certainly the message I was brought up with. And that my dad, both my parents actually, I'll be frank, my mum loves talking about people who's put on weight in a sneering way. But they don't know they're doing it. And my dad is loathsome about fat people and fatness.
Wow.
But I think there's a big, big positive in a kind of fat activism movement that stops people doing that, having that repulsion and shaming people mm. and also not being able to see the beauty in big bodies.
Mm.
But then the movement in some circles gets tipped over into saying, and this is ideal and should be held up as
sure.
Iconic and inspirational. And then I just think, have you not seen the film Wall-E? Where we're all just floating around in space. Like, that's like, no, we can't have... And if that is the way that we're going, with more and more people, I don't know, I feel very torn on this thing. Because I think part of me as a feminist wants to go, yes, all big, brilliant, yes, everything. And then, but part of me goes, oh, no, don't want everybody to be unwell.
Mm.
And actually, if what we're doing here is the equivalent of fetishizing something which is very far from ideal, much like an emaciated model
yep.
that's having a cracker and an apple a day.
Yeah. 20 mile reliance.
Yeah. Excuse me. I keep dropping bits. I always put things behind me on my chair and then they're yeah, just falling off, just yeah. flittering around. I basically just waffled on for ages there with rants and thoughts, but I feel a lot of conflict on that front. And I imagine is it just clearer cut for you about it's just better to be?
No, not necessarily. And I think my ultimate thing is that if you are miserable about your body,
yeah.
you're not going to look after yourself properly because you hate yourself. And it yeah. all comes from self-esteem. It all comes from having the self-worth to think, I want to be as healthy as I can be.
Mm.
And women's bodies come in all different shapes and sizes. We yeah. were just saying before, immense. Like, absolutely. I will never be... I've tried and I can't be like model thin. It doesn't suit me. It doesn't make me feel well.
I don't want to anymore though. I think as a teenager, and in my early 20s, it was, but you know, then I realised that the bit of me that wanted that was ill.
Exactly. My weight fluctuates quite a bit. But I look back at photos of myself when I was absolutely miserable, but I was thin.
Right.
And I now look at those photos and I think, no, I don't want to be that thin because I was miserable. There's a reason why I was that thin, and it's because I was miserable.
Well, here's a question.
Mm.
So you haven't always had an ideal relationship with eating?
No. I think it's more... Well, actually, to be fair, my relationship with exercise is probably more significant than my relationship with eating.
Right.
So there are times when I'm not exercising and I'm not eating at all and I'm not looking after myself at all and I'm gaining weight and that's not a healthy place for me to be. Mm-hmm. Equally, I can go to the other end of that spectrum where I'm not eating enough or I'm being more controlling with my eating and I'm exercising too much.
Yeah.
And I've just lost that balance. So I think probably where I am at the moment is a fairly healthy place.
But I guess you sound totally on it now, but like, were there times when you were younger where you were less kind of on the ball with that or aware of how good you were being to yourself or not?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I can remember being a teenager and really worrying about my weight and thinking that I was fat. And of course, I look at, you know, as every woman does, you look back at those photos now and go, I was so thin.
Yeah.
I don't ever worry about it.
I was a huge when I was 15.
Well, I then, in my late, early 20s, put on a lot of weight.
Right.
I was, very overweight. And, you know, luckily something switched. And, you know, I was working as a dietitian in hospitals, you know, very effective dietitian.
Was there a big pressure on you as a dietitian? As much as I would assume there would be on I spoke to for this podcast a former obstetric doctor who would have to quite regularly tell very overweight women that they had to lose weight to in order to become fertile and or to have safe pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And there must be some pressure on people in professions where you're telling people how to eat for you to look like you've got your shit in order.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think at that time I was working in hospitals and I was mainly looking after people who needed to eat more.
Mm-hmm.
So they were undernourished, malnourished people, which helped. I think I would have struggled to work in a weight management clinic at that way.
Yeah.
Just doesn't seem very genuine. Although I know some dietitians who are overweight and work with people who are trying to manage their weight, mm-hmm. and there's something there about both understand the situation. They both
totally. And I wonder whether there's something in that. That's one of the things I wanted to ask, actually. Like, are people in nutrition and dietitians, are they like people that work in therapy and social work, where lots of the people doing it are also people who either are or were earlier in their life some of those that are most in need of it?
Yep. What sort of foods is it that you really crave? What is it, the food?
Oh, no,
food
I don't like eating crap. I like eating really healthy stuff. Okay. I just like enormous portions. And also, I don't know whether this is... I mean, but basically, I think lots of people get to a point of fullness and feel disgusting or feel shame. I just feel great.
And I continue to feel great until I vomit.
No, I mean, I don't get quite to that point, but that feeling of like, oh, I love it.
I'll tell you a good story. It's a family thing last year. Mm. I can't remember what time of year it was. Easter. No, it can't be. Yeah, it must have been Easter time, actually.
Mm.
And my parents had invited some family friends over, people they hadn't seen for a long time. Mm. And I'd been in the newspaper that week. And I ate so much at dinner that I had to go and lie on the kitchen floor. And it was at this point that my parents said, oh, Sophie was in the Telegraph this week. Would you like to read the article?
No.
As I'm lying out, I'm a great dietitian. Here I am, resting my belly.
Cuddling my food, baby.
Literally, I couldn't even sit up. I was so full. And they were going, this is fantastic, Sophie. You're doing such a great job.
Say scrum-diddly-umptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrum-diddly-umptious.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Part of what I've been doing with my therapist is, like, it's, as I said a bit earlier, like, it's not about restrictive diets. So does that come into your advice for people sometimes?
Mm.
Like, it's not about calorie counting and stuff like that. I think that's amazing advice, full stop. And I think that the culture of dieting and cyclical dieting is one of the most toxic things in our society, especially for women.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think there's this real issue with people feeling like they're either being clean and doing well and winning and doing... I see lots of people who lose, like, 2 stone... and then regain it, and they feel a complete failure, and they hate themselves, and they're in a really bad place, and then they've got this massively restrictive diet, and they lose this 2 stone, and then they feel great, but then, of course, it's Christmas or Easter or a birthday, and they fail somehow, have a big drink, eat a pizza, and they feel like, I've messed it all up now, it's done, and then they just put back on 2 stone, because they give up. In London especially, that's really prevalent. I didn't so much see that in my practice in Devon. But... that's about pressure. That's about, you know, people thinking they have to be 100% perfect all the time. And that's just not human.
And also, it's just about the impermanency of it. Like, diets make you obsessed with food.
Yeah.
And they make, and that idea, like, there's one kind of group weight loss company, and I think they've stopped doing it now, but they used to categorise their food as sins.
Yeah.
And the calorific value, the nutritional value of certain foods was counted in the amount of sins that you're allowed in
a diet. And if you remember, nuts were sins because they're high calorie. Avocado was a sin.
Oh, okay. So this is another thing I really want to get into. Fat, like fats and things changing over time.
Yeah.
So right now, we think we know the nutritional content of things and what it's good to have in what quantities with other foods at what time. But that is totally different to the messages we were being given, I don't know, certainly when I was a kid. I'm 34. When I was a kid, it was fat is bad.
Yeah.
And now it's sugar is bad.
Yeah.
Do you have to take everything with a pinch of salt then?
No.
Should people take everything with a pinch of salt? Or are we learning more and we're right now and we were wrong then?
We are learning more. We are still not sure.
Is it influenced by food lobbies and people who've got money in the food industry?
No, not at all.
Really?
People say to me all the time, oh, you're all sponsored by the meat and dairy industry. Really? I bloody wish they'd give me some money. Not once have they offered me any money.
Yeah.
So not at all is the answer to your question about whether we're influenced by these things. You know, I work in probably, arguably, and I'll argue with some of my colleagues about this later,
mm-hmm.
the best nutrition research department probably in the whole of Europe. Is what we're doing upstairs here.
Amazing,
right?
At King's.
And our work would not get published.
Do you all agree in your academic circles then?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Interpretation of science, interpretation of data is complicated and difficult, and not everyone agrees. So the reason that we thought fat was bad and carbohydrates were good was because of the work that was done by a guy called Keyes in the 70s. He was looking at the Mediterranean diet and seeing that people ate a lot of carbohydrates, lots of pasta, lots of rice, and not very much saturated fat, not much processed meats. And so there's really complicated research went into it. But essentially, when you're looking at population studies, it's very difficult to control for things like the fact that at that time, all these people were doing manual jobs, 70s, rural Italy. Now we live in cities and sit on our bums all day.
Having their main meal in the middle of the day and taking 3 hours over it, then having a nap.
Yeah, and you know, going out to work on the fields, active job all day.
Yeah.
Coming home, having a long home-cooked meal by the lovely wife who stayed at home all day. And then back out on the fields.
She might have been a prick. There's no need to call her lovely.
She might have been pretty miserable. So, you know, it's very difficult. That's no longer really relevant to the way that we live our lives now. And that's only a change in over 30 years. So ultimately, do you need a massive bowl of cereal to fuel what you do first thing in the morning? If you're getting out of your bed, having a shower, getting on the tube or getting on the train or getting in your car and driving to your office and sitting on your bum all morning, do you need a big bowl of carbohydrate to fuel that activity? Probably not.
No.
You probably need...
But you should have something. How,
absolutely.
Is it true that breakfast is so important?
No, so that evidence again is really questionable now. So if you are someone who feels very hungry in the morning, have some breakfast. Great.
Well,
if
listen
you
to yourself.
Don't
it comes back
hungry.
Down to that. Listen to yourself.
Yeah.
What about to get your metabolism going though?
No, there's no evidence for
really?
It. We've
really?
Said this. We say these things. Oh, it kickstarts your metabolism. No evidence. PT
what about,
stuff.
So at the moment, one of the things that the government are doing to try and tackle childhood obesity is saying, and this seems to jar with me from my most current experience and the stuff I'm doing with my shrink, is that they're saying we need to move away from a grazing culture, and that if kids are going to have snacks, they need to be under 100 calories. Now, on the one hand, I get it. Kids shouldn't be having a chocolate bar. Three chocolate bars. Every day or you know, all this crap between us. But I was under the impression that a grazing culture, it's actually very healthy to have small amounts of good for you food every 2 or 3 hours, certainly for me, so that by the time I get to a meal, especially if there has been some activity and some exercise in, you should definitely smash some protein and carbs straight after some exercise. But then as well, also, even if there hasn't been any exercise, just a handful of nuts or a couple of apples or something, so that by the time I get to a meal, I'm not so hungry that I eat way too much.
Hmm.
I'm having one of these sticks of orange and melon.
It depends on what you're doing. This is one of the things we're trying to give nutrition advice to the general population. This is one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of dietitians speaking in the media, because giving general dietetic advice is quite hard because everyone's life is so different. Mm. So if you're exercising and you're training and you're trying to build muscle or you're trying to negate for that in your life, or you really struggle with quantities of food at meal times and feeling very hungry.
That's me.
Then yeah, you need to eat regularly so that you can control your appetite in that way.
Yeah.
If you're sitting on your bum all day and you're not doing anything and you don't enjoy exercise and you're talking about somebody who is periodically throughout the day snacking on biscuits, cakes, whatever it is, then no, that's not the right way of eating. Mm-hmm. But it depends on you as an individual, what you're doing, how you're eating, what your training you're doing, what training you're not doing, all these things. And there is no evidence that eating regularly improves your metabolism. Mm. We, you know, it's particularly personal trainers about this stuff about having to eat six more meals a day.
Yeah.
I don't have the time to prepare and eat six more meals a day.
Yeah, not home cooked. Would they have to be like? And what do you mean by meals then? Oh. I think some of them are a borderline snack, mate.
And just like processed food as well. You know, things like protein shakes, which is processed food. Yeah. All of those bars that you can buy that high protein or. Even the things that now are made of
Trek bars.
Mm,
all the stuff made out of dates and stuff, like Nikkid bars.
Just sugar. Sugar and carbs.
It's just not refined sugar.
Mm. But it's still sugar. Your body sees it in the same way. It's marketed cleverly, but it's processed food.
Yeah.
Is that what you want in your body?
So it's much better to have a handful of nuts as a protein after a train.
Eat your nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Eat yogurt.
Yeah.
So yogurt's fine. Eat nice fruit. But don't be buying products that are in a wrapper. If you're trying to eat, if you are in a position to make that decision, anything in a wrapper, it's processed food.
Yeah. Amazing to know.
Uh-huh.
Yum in my tum.
If you're a person of normal health who has a balanced diet of home-cooked food, should you need any supplements?
Mm-mm.
None.
Not necessarily. If you're eating... trouble is... do we really know what a balanced diet is? We, as the NHS, as dietitians, we band around this term.
Right.
You need to have a balanced diet. I'm guilty of it. People know what that means?
No.
Like, do you feel confident? We've just done some really interesting work, actually.
I cockily probably would say, yeah, I feel like I have a balanced diet. Yeah. But I feel like I think about... What I mean by that is I feel like I think about the nutritional content of each meal. And I try and think... the day before, at least, what I'm going to eat the following day.
Yeah, and I think you have a good understanding about macronutrients, so protein, carbohydrate, fat, where that's coming from in your diet and that sort of thing, which is helpful. But the majority of people don't know what I mean when I say a balanced diet. And so it's difficult. The answer to your question is that most people probably don't need supplementation. Most people, if they're an omnivore, so they eat meat and fish and dairy... no. If you're cutting out any major food groups, then yes, you need to think about supplementation. The best way to supplement yourself is with an A to Z multivitamin. You can spend hundreds of pounds a month on supplements. The ones from Poundland have pretty much the same nutritional profile.
Yeah. It's fascinating that there's not much evidence that it's bad to skip breakfast. What about eating really late at night?
There are benefits to having a... extended period of time where you don't have any nutrition, especially if you're trying to lose weight. Yeah,
right.
So fasting weight, getting your glycogen stores, which is like little batteries in your body where your glucose is stored.
Glycogen stores, I like the sound of it.
Stored
very
in your
science
liver
fiction.
And in is your it? Muscles. And you overnight, you in a sort of 8 hour sleep, if you're lucky enough to get an hour sleep,
which
I like to.
Big braggart.
The babies.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Great choice.
You burn a lot more energy over 8 hours sleep than you do doing 2 hours of cardio, for example.
Right.
Because your body needs energy all the time.
Yeah.
So during that overnight fast, you can then use up your glycogen stores so that the next day you can refill them or just use the energy that's in your blood from breakfast or whatever else.
Okay.
There are some benefits to having an extended overnight fast. But ultimately, if you're a healthy weight, carry on. You're doing the right thing.
Fascinating. Are superfoods real?
No. Next question.
Oh, I love it.
No, so I'll tell you something cool, though. We're doing some amazing research here with something called polyphenols, a bit like antioxidants, but they have lots of really important mechanisms in our body. And they exist in berries, predominantly in very high concentrations of berries.
Say again, polyphenols.
Polyphenols.
Phe with a fur.
Mm. And there's lots in coffee, and there's lots in red wine, and there's lots in like proper beer. And in lots of things that we enjoy, and lots of things that you'll notice are in things like the Mediterranean diet, where people's heart attack risk is lower. And we try to keep all our scientists here, we're trying to kind of separate these little polyphenols, these little chemicals, out of the plants and make them behave like they do in the plants, but in a concentrated format, so they're in like as a separate thing, but they won't behave like that. So they only really behave themselves and do what we want them to do when they're in their food form. And they're really pesky, and I love them because they do this magic work in our bodies, but only when they've got all their mates around them with their antioxidants and their bit of fructose from the fruit and all these other bits around them. And I love that.
Fascinating.
Magic, isn't it? Food is magic.
Like dance for you.
Mm.
Don't throw coins at the feet of a polyphenol.
Exactly. So try and take me away from my friends. I will only behave myself.
I love all of those things as well. Though I love berries and I love red wine and I love coffee.
There you go.
But also I really love chilli and hot things. Mm. Is that I've read something which I'd like to know if it's bollocks or not, that the same thing that sets off like happy receptors, not the science term, in chocolate, that there's like 10 times that in chilli.
I don't know is the answer.
Okay.
But certainly there is some evidence that it helps speed up your metabolism.
Really?
So marginally that it's not like...
Fine. Yeah.
Eating a curry that's spicy will make you lose weight. But yeah, there is some good evidence around them. They're interesting. Yeah. Interesting little things. Do all sorts of things in your body.
Why, when I'm hungover, do I want spicy food? Masochism.
Maybe also because when you're hungover, your taste buds are dampened down. You don't taste things as effectively, so you want something that's really strong flavoured. You want, like, salty things or, like, spicy things.
I do. I want to drink the sea.
What's
your go-to morning after night before if you drink food?
I do drink. Heavily. I'm drinking. What do I like? So I used to live... Do you know Salcombe in Devon?
Yes.
It's so
gorgeous.
Beautiful. So I used to live there. In a past life.
Oh.
And there's this place on the seafront that does a sausage and hash brown sandwich.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, that is the cure to any hangover.
Do you know what that's made me think of in Edinburgh? And I'm sure across Scotland, in their like pie shops that are like their Greggs's. Well, there's Greggs there too, but in their independent version, they do a thing called a tatty dog.
Okay.
Which is not dissimilar. It's a hot dog surrounded by a cone of hash brown.
Oh, wow.
Disgusting. In a magical way.
When I went to Edinburgh, I was very excited to find out that you can have a deep fat fried macaroni cheese pie.
Yes. Oh, God, it's mucky.
Which is just as fun to say as it is to eat.
I'm sure. I like it you didn't try it. That's where you draw the line. Yeah. I cannot call myself a dietitian and eat a deep... Oh, my God.
Deep fat fried macaroni cheese pie.
Deep fat fried macaroni cheese pie.
Mm. What I like about it was it was battered. So I had batter, pastry, cheese, carbohydrates.
Battered! Because they batter some fish and chip shops in it. It's got, yeah, they batter pizza, they batter whole cheeseburgers.
I just don't know how I feel about that, Drew.
I mean, what I have, this is where I have conflict, is because intellectually I'm repulsed.
Absolutely.
But my mouth is watering. And I'm full. Were you a fussy kid?
Mm, super fussy.
Oh, yeah.
I was vegetarian for a long time.
I don't think that counts as a type of fussiness, but you were vegetarian because you were fussy.
I was a vegetarian that largely only ate cheese and carrot.
Really?
Mm. Terrible vegetarian. I know. But I was a vegetarian because I was obsessed with animal rights and things as a kid. My mum was like, I was ruining family meals by asking whether the chicken died naturally or like everything else.
When we met before, you were telling me that you get asked to talk on radio and TV a lot about the dangers of a totally vegan diet. So I want to talk about that, but also you told me about the horrible, horrible backlash from that on social media from the vegan community. Mm. So I would like, if you don't mind, share a bit of that with us too, because it seems absurd to me.
So I was invited on BBC Two and I spoke about the potential risks of following a vegan diet and why it's not right for lots of people to follow a vegan diet.
Yeah.
So, disclaimer, totally support anyone that wants to follow a vegan diet.
Yeah.
completely behind you. I will support you. I will help you with planning your diet so it's healthy and balanced. However, it's very difficult to have a balanced and healthy vegan diet. As you know, it takes a lot more planning and preparation and thought and everything else. And that's because the nutrients in plants are more difficult to find. It's more difficult to meet your nutrition requirements, particularly for micronutrients like vitamin B12, just isn't available. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure that you supplement it.
Nooch.
Is that right?
There's this stuff called Engevita, I think the company is, but they're the same one that make that really nice stock.
Yeah.
But they make it's called nutritional yeast, and it gets the nickname in the planted community of nooch.
Yeah.
And it looks like fish food,
but
it tastes of umami. It tastes cheesy, so it's lovely sprinkled on beans on toast or something like that.
And you need lots of that, and that's great, and that's fine. Or you can take, obviously, a vitamin supplement. And there's things that you can't get because you're not having any fish.
So algae
supplements and things.
Yes. Huh. My mother-in-law keeps me in stock with algae supplements.
Nice to hear it.
So, but would it be ideal to just have fish every now and again?
Yeah.
What I'm interested to know is the backlash that you got after you were on BBC2.
I was on BBC2. I was saying some of these things, which I think were fairly balanced.
Well, they're certainly informed.
When I listened back to it, I thought... Because you know when... Well, I don't know about yourself, but sometimes when you do things, you think, did I really... Was it that bad? Was it not that bad? And I listened back to it, and I'll stand by what I said. But the backlash I got was horrific.
Really?
Really aggressive. People were contacting work. People were saying that I should be struck off. People were saying that I'm completely out of date, that what I'm teaching is nonsense, that I was sponsored by the meat and dairy industry. This one woman sent me and three or four of my colleagues, not here, different colleagues who had... sort of backed me up on Twitter and on Facebook or whatever else, sent them emails also saying similar things, but she was saying that I was a Nazi-eyed troll and that even her husband said he would be repulsed to have sex with me.
Oh my god!
So offensive. And, you know, she was saying, I've sent this to your manager, I've done this, I've done that. And then, you know, interestingly, one of the symptoms of vitamin B12 deficiency is paranoid delusion. And we'll leave that there.
I think it's so weird that the vegan community has to behave like a cult and can't see that that's an unhelpful thing.
Mm, I mean,
do you know Grace Dent?
I know.
She's an amazing food writer.
Mm. Yeah.
And she's kind of vegan-ish, as am I.
Mm.
And she wrote a brilliant, I'll put a link to it in the podcast, but a brilliant, brilliant article in The Guardian recently about veganishness and how she'd kept it under the radar, because if you are veganish for environmental reasons and for her a bit more, those two things, but also in her, I think there's genuinely like a taste preference, whereas I really love meat and fish and dairy, but also I don't miss them because I'm allowed them whenever I want,
of course. Yeah.
She was saying that if you do that, then it makes carnivores hate you because it's fun to hate planty people, but no one hates the veganish more than a vegan.
A strict vegan.
Well, because it's like you're saying, you know, to them, all consumption of those things is like a religion.
Yeah.
Abhorrent.
Agreed, yeah.
To me, that's as bonkers as someone force feeding someone a dead animal.
Absolutely.
It's just bonkers. It's not the equivalent of a moral horror.
No. It's a challenging area to work in. It's not something that I said to myself, I'm going to go and to tell people who are being vegan that they need to stop it. That was never my intention, ever. My intention has always been, brilliant, if that's what you're doing and that you believe in it and you're behind it, all power to you. However, there are some nutrients that you're likely to be missing. Let's not have a massive wave of teenage girls who've got osteoporosis at 40. Thanks very much. Do you know what I mean? That's, you know, let's not...
So you think there's, I mean, because we spoke about this before, there's some danger in the rise of veganism now, in that people taking it on don't have the nutritional wisdom to supplement in the ways that they're going to need to.
Yeah, so we've literally just done some research, which isn't published yet, but I'll give you a headline, which is quite interesting. So we did a survey of the university population, which is known to be kind of part of this new wave of veganism, lots of particularly women going vegan in the university population, and vegetarians in the population that we studied, we had omnivores, vegetarians and vegans. The vegetarians tended to know that they were at risk of B12 deficiency, for example, tended to know that they were at risk of calcium deficiency, tended to be a bit more moderate in terms of saying, I'm not really sure if my diet's balanced or not. And their nutritional knowledge was really good. General nutritional knowledge was very good. So we measured knowledge, attitude and practices. Their influences to the things that made them choose to be a vegetarian were generally family and friends or, you know, other things like that. the vegan population that we looked at in this study, small population, statistically much, much more of them said, I'm not at risk of any deficiencies at all. They also said, yes, my diet is definitely balanced. They also said that the majority of their influences were social media, blogs, and things like Cowspiracy or whatever else. And so, to me, that's where the responsibility lies. If you're promoting a vegan diet, just put that you need to consider supplementation. Just put that this diet is lower than an omnivorous diet in things like calcium. It's more difficult to access calcium, iron, vitamin B12, and these fish oils on this diet. And therefore, you want to think about supplementation. Yeah. Just have take some
responsibility. Either with the foods or with supplements.
Absolutely. Whatever, you know, but just...
What planty things are high in calcium?
Planty things. Trouble with calcium in plants is that it's bound to things like oxalates. So spinach is really high in calcium, but this calcium is bound
like raw greens
to oxalates, right. So you can't absorb it very well.
Right.
So, and the other thing is when you fortify things like plant-based milks with calcium, our bodies don't necessarily use that in the same sort of way.
Right.
So the flip side of that is the more plants you have, the easier it is for your bones to stay mineralized, but you need to mineralize them very effectively as a child. So as long as you've had milk all the way through your childhood, chances are switching to a vegan diet is actually going to continue to support your bones in the same way as it would.
Splendid.
If you carried on eating.
So my mother-in-law is absolutely right to have made sure that I kept giving my two-year-old cow's milk.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Here's your scenario, Sophie. Mm-hmm. 100 donkeys are trapped in an underground bunker, which may or may not be Kim Jong-un's version of his own private reindeers.
Oh, my God.
To carry him to and from his secret meetings. These donkeys are under threat. He's finished with them because he's realised there are cars now. He's a notoriously lovely and reasonable guy, so he's going to have them all slowly flicked to death. Only you can save them. And weirdly, you have to do it by climbing Everest really fast. You do it!
Hooray!
You're a hero! But you're ever so tired out and peckish.
Oh, yeah, I'll be very tired.
You're allowed a shower or whatever to make yourself feel comfortable and realise how hungry you are, and then it's time for your reward, the feast of your dreams! Mm. Nothing in your answer needs to exist as a practical or even... non-fictional. It's just your idea of ultimate perfection. It doesn't have to be a big, small. It can be. I want to know what you would like to eat, drink, where, and who with.
Oh, great question. So I'm a massive fan of like slow cooked meats, particularly lamb.
Okay.
So I would probably go for that sort of thing with lots of nice salads and lots of really nice, like exciting little side dishes. That's my thing.
Are you into lamb that's been cooked with a supplementary fruit?
I am. Yeah. I like an apricot, but I really like lamb with cinnamon, like Moroccan type flavours is my real,
slow tagine lamb.
Particularly like my own slow cooked lamb is my preference.
Fabulous. You'd cook for yourself.
I think that's the first time
that's come up.
Do you know what? One of my best things to do is cook for family and friends. Really? I love it. I love looking after people in that way. It's something I really enjoy doing. I live on my own and it's very sad for me.
I'll come round,
so
mate.
Just the orange. Yeah.
I'll come round for some carrots and melon.
I cook you something.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So, that's kind of things I would have.
Put? Or don't care for
put? Oh, yeah. What would I have? Probably like, I really like lemon desserts. I'm really into like fruity desserts. I'm not really a chocolate person.
Okay.
Or a sticky toffee pudding person, really.
Sticky toffee pudding?
Sticky toffee pudding.
Sticky toffee pudding.
But I love like a lemony dessert or like a pavlova, that kind of thing is really my thing.
Like a tarte citron?
Oh, yeah. More like maybe a panna cotta type affair. That's what I'm into.
That's like a set wobbly yogurt.
Yeah.
Delicious. It's like a milky jelly.
Yeah.
I'm doing
a gesture with raspberries.
You can have it with raspberries.
Yeah.
And I put a lemon on it just for you.
And can I have a shortbread biscuit, please?
Yes, you can.
Uh-huh.
You can have what you like.
Oh, my God.
What are you having to drink?
Wine.
You're not having a starter?
Oh, I'd like some fish for my starter, please.
Would you? White bait or like a slab of something chunkier?
Do you know what I love is fish patés. So
ooh,
like crab.
Fish pate.
Crab pate. Smoked salmon pate. Really like smoked salmon, all those kinds of things. Some sort of fish platter. What you'll understand from the things I'm talking about is that I like to eat a lot of different things all at the same time.
Yes, no, me too. Yeah. But actually, I think that's quite traditional, actually, a fish starter.
True.
A lamb.
True.
Traditional and then a lemony raspberry panna cotta. What with what colour wine, yellow or red?
Well, white preferably.
Yeah.
Yellow tends to give me a bit of a hangover.
Got a favourite white wine?
I really like Pickpull.
Oh!
So fancy.
Had some Pickpull last night.
Wow,
I did.
Oh, I'm jealous. Don't.
Great name as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Pickpull.
Pickpull de Pinay.
My friend's having Pickpull at her wedding.
Is she now?
Yes.
Can I come or...?
I'll ask her.
Great.
Sam, if you're listening, can my new friend, dietitian Sophie Medling, come to your wedding?
Just for the pick pull.
And who are you with?
Oh, tricky question.
Not the vegan lobby.
Vegans are welcome.
They okay.
Have the salads. But
and the veganish.
Now, how do you decide between, like, somebody that you're secretly in love with, like a person that you've never met, or... like your best friends and your family.
I mean, this is the dream scenario. So, unsecret the secret.
Oh yeah, of course you can have them all.
Okay, great.
And so, your best friends.
Yeah, so I have a really, really close friend who I'm very lucky to have in London and all over the place. So I'd love to have all of them there, and my wonderful family, and Anthony Joshua.
I mean, he's got some disgustingly ignorant opinions on gender, but you can have him there. Yes.
I need to read
him talking about he's talking about all the stuff he likes doing with his nephew, and it's just all the fun stuff. And then he said, but not his niece. Like, these are little kids, and he says something like, of course I wouldn't do all that stuff with her. She needs to become someone's good wife one day.
Oh, no, I don't want to be his good wife.
Yes.
No, thank you.
So you can have him there.
No,
but can you educate him and slap him about a bit first? Box him. Box him cleverer.
I don't think that's possible.
You've gone right.
If anything, he's going to get less clever as time goes along.
Right.
It's a no from me. I'll have to find a new crush.
Oh, that's the first time I've talked someone out of their dream guest. I'm not sure I've done the right thing.
Oh, you have.
How great was Sophie? She's on Twitter, @SophieDietitian, and on Insta, it's @Sophie_dietitian. She's all over the telly and radio, and I think she's a real wonder. I got the impression that some of her answers are right now, but they're in a constant state of flux, so I am going to make an effort to eventually talk to other food and eating experts too, and see how even more of them surf the shifting sands. Anyway, follow her on the socials, please. I've been very busy with bits of writing and filming, and that's exciting. I've only got one thing to tout to you, really, and it's not even me. Two brilliant stand-ups who I'm directing, Sarah Barron and Laura Lex, with new shows, are previewing in Camden in North London on the 25th of June. It's the Camden Head in Camden. It's very cheap. And you'd be welcome at that. I'm not doing much, but they're great. Otherwise, please keep showing love to this show. It's on all the socials @TheHooveringPod. I'm on Patreon if you ever even faintly flush. And also my own Twitter is @JessicaFosterQ. Any questions or longer chats you want to have, or indeed if you're based in South or West London and you want a code for some half-price wonky veg from oddbox.co.uk, any of those things, email me through my website, jessicafosterq.com. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.